Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome along to a brand new writer's routine. This week on the show, we're chatting to Brian Christie. He worked as head of special investigations for National Geographic, traveling around the world, uncovering crime, putting himself in danger. And he's brought out his debut fiction book. It's called In the Company of Killers. And they do say, write what you know. The book is about Tom Clay, who's a spy undercover as a wildlife reporter. Now, we chat about some of the grand plans that he had for his writing that he hasn't exactly been able to pull off. Also, he tells us why you have to smell the paper, even in the digital age. And we find out what reporting taught him about writing fiction.
I called what I did as a reporter results-oriented reporting, because I tried to tell stories that were covered important issues, wildlife trafficking, for example. But I tried to tell them, including all the elements one would need to stop the criminal enterprise I was going after. So I told you who the criminal was, what his product was. I told you who the corrupt government official was who was enabling that. I probably told you what law he was violating and needed to be stronger. That formula yielded really good results. We got people put in jail. We got laws changed. We got Vatican City raided for its ivory shops. We got a pedophile put in defrocked. And I'm doing in fiction something we're calling impact fiction. And the idea is to not just write a thriller, not just write something that's entertaining, but take a lesson from George Orwell and tell stories that shed light on an important issue and tell them in a way that might make a difference.
There is more on the way with Brian Christie in this week's Writer's Routine. Yes, welcome along. It's Writer's Routine. This is the show where we take a look inside an author's working day. We comb through it to steal some nuggets of knowledge that might help us out day to day. My name's Dan Simpson, and I think what with lockdown and wanderlust and not being able to go very far, I've been on a real adventure bent recently. You might remember this. We had Alistair Humphreys, who was all about doorstep adventures. He was on the show last year. And I'm still on that like wave at the moment. So our guest today really has got my dream job. My dream job in theory. I don't know whether I could do it in practice. That's the question. Brian Christie was head of special investigations for National Geographic, which, let's be honest, sounds like a made-up job, doesn't it? But really, it is a thing. He's been all around the world reporting and working on very secretive stuff, blowing the case wide open. You can hear all about them in the episode. And now he started writing books. His first was non-fiction. It was called The Lizard King. It was all about snake smuggling across the globe. And now his first novel is out. It's called In the Company of Killers. And it's about Tom Clay. We talk about how he works, when he works, where he works, what he's learned from a reporting schedule that's influenced his writing now. You can also hear about the huge travel and writing plans that he had. Very romantic they were too, and why they didn't quite work out, but he got pretty far. And we talk quite extensively about knife throwing as well. Still not sure why, But it's interesting to hear about people's hobbies and passions. So that's on the way. First, we get into it, as we always do, with what Brian Christie sees around him in the place where he sits down to write.
I have sort of an eclectic office. I have a giant wasp nest. I have an elephant sculpture. I have some awards I've won and paintings my wife has done from Africa. And I have a few pet snakes in my office, which are local to the United States.
With the pet snakes, Brian, you wrote the Lizard King, this nonfiction book all about the trade of lizards and reptiles and creatures like this. Were you interested in snakes before that story?
Oh yeah, ever since I was a little boy. On my street when I was a little kid, we used to trade turtles and snakes and lizards for like normal children trade baseball cards in the United States. So I'd always had a love for it, and that love sort of went away. You move into your teenage years, and you move on to sports and other things, and then you become a professional. And I suppressed most of the things that were kind of my childhood passions, including writing. I went to law school instead, and eventually. Well, my father got very ill, and it led me to rethink what mattered to me. And once I did that, all sorts of things from my childhood started coming back. So that led to the Lizard King book.
If I were to walk into your writing room, where would I find you at work? Have you got a big, you know, oaky desk? Are you someone that maybe likes to lounge back in a nice leather chair while you're typing away? Talk us through that situation, Brian.
Gotcha. So I have an old farmhouse desk table as my desk, and it's I chose that because I don't I like not caring about my equipment to the extent. I have a very good Aeron chair that I sit in because of back issues years ago, and it's been great for me. And otherwise, I'm facing a wall. I've tried in different ways to look out the window and that sort of thing, but I find that a closeted kind of life is pretty good for me. There was a period I had a John Steinbeck. Period in my life where I thought, I'm going to sell off everything and I'm going to buy a motorhome or trailer and drive around the country with my dog and write from that. And that was maybe the worst idea I've ever had.
How far did you get along in that idea, Brian?
Too far, actually. I bought the vehicle without testing whether I could write in a, it was just a van with a camper top, pop-up top. I flew halfway across the country to meet a guy to buy his van. I drove home. I parked it. Turns out you weren't allowed to park that kind of vehicle where I lived. And I think I went on one adventure and nearly got arrested. And that was the end of that excitement.
Yeah, if the police get involved, I think that's a pretty smart warning. So you've spoken about the inspiration that's in your room. What about the practicalities of writing? With stuff that you've worked on in the past, it must take quite some serious logistics and planning. With your debut novel, is there a similar thing there? So I'm talking, post-it notes with plot points. Is there a big whiteboard, a chart letting you know what's happening when?
That's a great question in my case. And photographers, I worked for National Geographic for a long time, and photographers that came to visit me would be aghast. I live in a different place now, but I tend to write on every surface with a dry erase marker. So I have and must have a giant whiteboard, at least one, and where I do plot points and character ideas. But I also have steel filing cabinets. I'm a big believer in paper files. The lawyer in me, we used to have a line at our law firm, you've got to smell the paper. And what that means is you have to look at original source documents, not secondary sources, primary sources. And I've kept that. So I have all kinds of investigative reports and government documents in files to an overwhelming degree. And every one of those filing cabinets is written on with notes to myself, character ideas, things on the, while I'm on the phone and I can't find a pen, I can usually find a dry erase marker. So it looks like when things are going well for me, my space looks like a TV obsessed crime investigator.
You seem, through your work and history, you seem quite a practical person, getting down to the truth and the nitty gritty and all of that stuff. How much do you care about the way your work looks on a screen while you are working on it? Are you someone that, you know, takes time poring over typefaces and softwares?
I don't care at all about the font and that sort of thing. I do, to the extent I use, you know, just your standard Word for building the stories. I do use a few software programs to map and diagram. And I find that visually diagramming is really helpful for me. I can sweat over something for days and days, and then I'll remember that, oh, hey, why don't you try to map that out? And when I map things out, it really opens things up for me. And in this book, one of the great, one of the most important things I did, both on a whiteboard and in this using the software, was to map things out and then stand back and look at it and say, okay, what if that line, instead of connecting to this character, what if this character were connected to someone else? Or to the extent the arrows have directions, what if you switch the direction so the good guy became a bad guy? And that was really helpful too.
What form does this mapping take? It's quite hard to do when you're in the States and I'm in the UK. I can't see it. Could you just try your best to try to describe how it looks?
Sure. It's a basic flowchart software, but I don't follow any of the rules of flowcharting. I decide which symbols I want to use for characters. Picture flowchart software where you kind of have the rectangles and ovals and choices of arrows, and I use a very basic symbology, but I do color code it. So the red boxes will be criminals or bad guys. The green boxes will be more on the hero side of things, then I'll shade in between. And as things develop, I might have, in a wildlife related story, I might have the rangers in blue boxes. Then I do sub boxes that identify their character traits and link them by relationship and link them to organizations as well. I try to be disciplined about it, so they are pretty much the same at least five days a week. My wife and I wake up. We have three dogs. We take the dogs. I take the dogs out and then bring them back and feed them and make us coffee. My wife calls her mom every morning, and we have some breakfast. And by the end of breakfast, my foot is kind of tapping to get to my office. We just moved to the house we're in now. And we outfitted the garage as my office. So I'm in what used to be a garage. And so there's not a lot of light here, unfortunately. There's just three smaller windows. But it's a big space. It also is our gym, at least during COVID. And so then I start. I open my laptop. It's connected to a bigger monitor and a separate keyboard. And I look at what I did the day before, and I have and I look at my chart, and I decide what my scene is for the day, and I start to write. And I let that, ideally, that flow. One of my favorite things about writing is it's the only time I can see my subconscious working the way it does. And to have things I haven't thought of appear on the screen in front of me is such an exciting thing for me. And it makes me, it's really uplifting. And it's very exciting for me. So I'll do that. And I do that with Eva, the older of the three dogs, insists that she join me in the office. And she sleeps in, she's a crate. We don't close the door, but she likes to go in the crate. And so I will work until Eva says it is time to stop working. And we have a bit of an odd routine where that's usually about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I don't usually take lunch. I throw knives to clear my head, I guess. And Eva is very insistent that that happens. So we do this exact same walk from my office, following the exact same route to a big old stump, kind of on the edge of the woods. There's not many people around where we live. And it's like archery, but with competition knives. And I'll do that.
Brian, sorry, very quickly, can I just ask a question? I can't let someone come on the show and say they chuck knives and kind of let that go, if that's all right. I guess why? So many people have different hobbies and different, you know, ways that they like to get in that zen state, I guess. And you know, you mentioned it's like archery with knives. I guess, why is it not archery? Why have you landed on this particular hobby, do you think?
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot, because it's a kind of a weird thing, and I don't really tell people, although I'm telling you for some reason. So I can, the couple of threads that I can, I think, motivate me to do it. The biggest driver, and probably the reason I compared it to archery, is when I was a boy, my father exposed a kind of a secret life, his life before he had, before family, one day when he said, I'm going to order a bow and arrow. And I said, we lived in a suburban neighborhood, and I didn't know he knew anything about archery. And he got this extraordinary bow, is beautiful wood, and a long bow, and he strung it, and I tried to string it, and I couldn't. And when the closest I got, the string caught my finger, and it was very painful. And we went out in the backyard, and he had picked up a few hay bales somewhere, and the hay bales were in the backyard, and he took a He practiced a little bit first, but he took a book of matches and stuck them on the hay bale and went back to where we were shooting from and shot the book of matches. And I thought that was the most extraordinary thing. And he bought me a bow and insisted that if I wanted to shoot a bow or his bow, that I needed to practice. And I practiced relentlessly. And then like these other things I talked to you about, eventually that goes away. And years later, I started doing some martial arts, the Filipino martial arts, which are knife related, Pakiti Tirsia styles, weapons oriented. And one of the things is knives. And I always wanted to throw knives. So I got a few and began chucking them around. And it's very difficult. The style I throw is called no spin. So it's the knife, you have to be able to balance the knife and assess when to release the knife to have it flow through the air without spinning. So it's not like in the movies. And if you can do that, you can hit a target from almost every distance, which is different from the kind of end over end throwing of knives, where if you don't know the distance, you're not going to be able to make a stick. So it's harder.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, better get 30, better get 20, 20, 20, better get 20, 20, better get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So there you go. You come to the podcast for writing tips. You stay for advice on obscure techniques on how to throw a knife. More actual writing stuff in just a sec, don't worry. Talking about advice, if you're looking for some writing advice during the week, you can get involved over on our Patreon page. We're chatting there about all sorts of stuff, sharing tips with each other. I'm trying to make it a little bit of a writing social network. We've been talking about fonts, about lockdown silver linings as well. And there's loads more to come at patreon.com/writersroutine. If you get involved, you can also get some merch. You can get bonus episodes as well. And there is a way for your book to sponsor the show. So if you've released something over the last year, which hasn't made much cut through because of everything, let me shout about it nice and loudly for you. To do that, you need to help us out. Help us carry on bringing you these chats with as many authors as we can, as frequently as we can, and support the show at patreon.com/writersroutine. Let's get back to it with Brian Christie then. Chat about his debut novel, In the Company of Killers. In this half, we talk about the book. We talk about the balance between Tom Clay as a journalist and as a spy. Also, you can hear how he gets into his characters, and we pick things up talking about the last little bits of his writing day. What does he want to get done when he actually sits down to work?
If I can get a scene, you know, a 3 or 4 pages into a scene, I'm very happy. If I can come up with, and well before that, I spend weeks and weeks, and probably I really mean months, walking around my office yelling to no one, because I can't think of something that is compelling enough and important enough to spend time with. And when I do have that part of the equation, can I imagine a character well enough to fit into that world? Do I know anyone that could serve as basis? And I put my journalist hat on and I say, okay, what research is that going to involve? And I start to map that out, and I map that. I've done that many times for issues. I try to write, I called what I did as a reporter results-oriented reporting, because I tried to tell stories that were covered important issues, wildlife trafficking, for example. But I tried to tell them, including all the elements one would need to stop the criminal enterprise I was going after. So I told you who the criminal was, what his product was. I told you who the corrupt government official was who was enabling that. I probably told you what law he was violating and needed to be stronger, and even involved politicians and diplomats. So that formula yielded, on the National Geographic platform, yielded really good results. We got people put in jail. We got laws changed. We got Vatican City raided for its ivory shops. We got a pedophile put in or defrocked. And I'm doing in fiction something we're calling impact fiction. And the idea is to not just write I'm in the thriller genre, but not just write a thriller, not just write something that's entertaining, but take a lesson from George Orwell in particular and tell stories that shed light on an important issue and tell them in a way that might make a difference.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up. I wanted to ask you about why fiction, I guess, and why now? When you've had the kind of career that you've had, what is it that appeals to you about writing fiction when you've seen so much that is probably stranger than fiction itself? Why are you now in your room walking your dogs, dreaming up these ideas as opposed to getting out there and living it yourself?
Well, so you're asking me a couple of questions, and so the last one first. I haven't hung up my boots. I still believe that the best stories are, truth is stranger than fiction. But it doesn't have to be. You can go out and get the truth and put it in your fiction. And I continue to make field investigation part of my writing. But the other sort of aspect of fiction is that you can get at sides of stories that you can't fit into a magazine article, and you can get into the interior of characters in a way, of course, that you can't in nonfiction. And then for me, again, you're absolutely right. I've been really privileged to see the world. I've been all over the world and seen and focused on crime and seen all sorts of criminal activity. And over time, I realized I was limited in the kinds of stories I could tell by the criminals. So I had to, you want a bad guy, and you want, and you look into what he's been doing or she's been doing, and you tell that story. But while you're doing that, you're exposed to that guy's friend who is in a different industry, or and each of these is a siloed story because it's nonfiction. But fiction, you can make these people have a relationship, and it's hard for me to describe for people, but every investigation is an effort to draw a line through a series of facts, and the best stories for me have resulted because I've spent time and enough time to eventually see lines that other people hadn't seen or I hadn't anticipated. In fiction, my imagination can go even further, and I can see lines between things that I think are important to connect, whether they are in fact actually connected. And that means a lot to me, and it really lets your imagination have some fun.
Now, so the debut novel is In the Company of Killers. With everything you've just told me in mind, Brian, tell us about the moment that the very first moment that the idea for this story came into your head. How did Tom Clay kind of present himself to you?
Well, I've had the privilege of working with some extraordinary guys in the field, and so Clay is sort of an amalgam of some of the harder core people I've worked with, and I thought he would be a. I studied in Japan for a while, and I liked some of the old samurai movies and that sort of thing, and I liked the idea of the Ronin, the wandering samurai. I like that as a main character. I got a lot of pushback years ago when I said I wanted to have a main character that was a journalist. The publishing establishment responded to me with, you need more at stake for your protagonist. Journalists don't have enough at stake. They're just watchers. And of course, 20 years later, journalists are being murdered around the world for their work. And we all know that we were wrong to undervalue the work of journalists. And it's one reason we are in the state we are in, because we haven't recognized what journalists have at stake in doing their jobs. So I wanted that kind of, I wanted a heroic character like that. A few things had happened. I follow a little bit of what's happening in the defense world, and got to see a number of mercenaries operating in Central Africa. There are a lot of valuable minerals, as you know. All the things that go into your smartphone and computers are mined there, and the companies that own them are not always who you think they are, and I wanted to explore that, and so I kind of put those two things together.
And now lastly, just because I know you need to get off in a couple of minutes, being a journalist for so long and now writing novels, what did one teach you about the other? How do you think journalism has influenced the way you wrote fiction?
So I had a very famous journalist warn me early on that if you don't stay in journalism too long, if you really do care about fiction, because you'll become too rigid. And so that has always been in the back of my mind. But the thing that journalism gives you is a really rigorous discipline to tell stories, to tell the facts, the bones of a story in a way that makes sense. And that has been invaluable, and I have a very strong guide for what is realistic and what is not. And operating in the thriller genre, most thrillers, I think most people will agree, seem unrealistic very quickly. And so journalism has really helped me keep my feet on the ground as a storyteller.
And that is it for this week's Writer's Routine. Thank you so much to Brian Christie for coming on. You can get a copy of his book, In the Company of Killers, in the episode notes, wherever you're listening, and over at writersroutine.com as well. Next time out, we're chatting to fellow podcaster Rosie Wilby, who's released a brand new book based on her show of the same name. It's called The Breakup Monologues. It's a good, funny episode. She's a very good comedian, is Rosie. I'm excited for you to hear that. That's happening next week on the show with Rosie Wilby. In the meantime, help us out at patreon.com/writersroutine. Give us a follow on Twitter at writerspod there. You can get in touch, writersroutine.com, and leave a review on Apple, and make sure you're for following us. They used to say subscribed. Now they say follow. I have to be correct with my terminology. Otherwise, what's the point? Give us a follow on Apple if that's how you listen. And tell someone you know who you think could benefit from these tips. Let them know. Why don't you? It's nice to be nice. And I will see you next week with Rosie Wilby on Writer's Routine. Until then, bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.